Ghosts, the Bermuda Triangle, ESP, the supernatural, UFOs, mystery and imagination.
Hello, I'm Rick Young. Join me as we explore the unexplained on Mysteries and Imagination.
Hello, I'm Rick Young, and once again we're reading from Charles Berlitz's The Bermuda Triangle. And today we're going to look at Chapter 3, The Sea of Lost Ships. Ship disappearances within the triangle have principally occurred in the region of the western Atlantic Ocean called the Sargasso Sea, a so-called largely immobile sea named after the seaweed sargassum. If anything were needed to intensify the mystery of the triangle, such as an element, is provided by the Sargasso Sea, itself a mystery ever since the first Spanish and Portuguese seamen encountered it 500 years ago. And, if we include what now seem to have been probable penetrations and crossings of the Sargasso Sea by Phoenician and Carthaginian oceangoers, it has been observed a mystery for thousands of years. The Sargasso Sea is a huge area of the western North Atlantic characterized by the presence of a kind of floating seaweed or sargassum, which lazily floats either separately or in large masses and marks the boundaries of the sea within the ocean. When Columbus on his first voyage observed so much seaweed, he mistakenly deduced that land was near and was greatly encouraged by it, a sentiment not wholeheartedly shared by his crew. The Sargasso Sea is characterized not only by its omnipresent seaweed, but by its deadly calms, a fact that may have started with the picturesque but unnerving legend of the Sea of Lost Ships, the Graveyard of Lost Ships, and the Sea of Fear. This sailor's legend told of a great Atlantic surface graveyard containing ships from all ages of seafaring man caught and immobilized in fields of seaweed, slowly decaying but still manned by skeleton crews, or rather, crews of skeletons, comprised of unfortunates who could not escape and shared the doom of their ships. In this area, the deaths were found to have trapped steamers and yachts and whalers and clippers and packets and brigantines and pirate vessels, and to make the story better, Spanish treasure galleons. In enthusiastic retelling of the stories, the tellers included that other ships should have certainly rotted away and disappeared by the time of the telling, such as the dragon ships of the Vikings, with skeletons still at the oars, Arab sailing galleys, Roman ships with their great banks of oars, Phoenician trading ships with silver anchors, and even the great ships of the lost Atlantis, their bows covered with fitted gold plate, all doomed to rot for centuries in a motionless sea. The first legends about the Sargasso Sea may stem from the Phoenicians and Carthaginians, who possibly crossed it thousands of years ago and made landfalls in the Americas, as indicated by many Phoenician stone inscriptions in Brazil, and some in the United States. Caches of Phoenician coins first found in the Azores, Carthaginian coins later found in Venezuela and the southeast coast of the United States, as well as ancient pictorial representations of what appears to be visitors from Mexico. The following report from the Carthaginian admiral Himilco, made in the year 500 BC, strikes a familiar, if somewhat sensational, chord in reference to the seaweed fields and lack of winds in the Sargasso Sea. He stated, "No breeze drives the ship, so dead is the sluggish wind of this idle sea. There is much seaweed among the waves. It holds back the ships like bushes. The sea has no great depth. The surface of the earth is barely covered by a little water. The monsters of the sea move continuously to and fro, and fierce monsters swim among the sluggish and slowly creeping ships." This admiral may be pardoned a certain understandable exaggeration across the vaults of time, and besides, the Phoenician Carthaginian ocean travelers were most anxious to discourage other travelers of the time from sailing past the Pillars of Hercules, as we know it, Gibraltar, which is the entrance of the Mediterranean Sea into the Ocean Sea beyond. This was primarily to keep themselves the profitable trade that they had with the cultures of the Atlantic coasts of Europe and Africa, and perhaps even further afield. The Carthaginians had even a mandatory death sentence for their sea captains who betrayed their routes or even their presence on the Atlantic, a factor which explains why the Carthaginian penchant for sinking all strange ships near or past Gibraltar, or, when not strong enough to do so, to escape notice, scuttling their own craft if necessary. Other ancient writers have embroidered on these early reports and have commented on the shoals and shallows in the Atlantic left by the subsidence of the lost continent of Atlantis, as well as the seaweed which meshed the oars and stopped the galleys. Like most legends, the Sea of Lost Ships could have some basis in reality. Although embroidered with fantasy and dreams, the Australian Alan Villiers, a lifelong sailor who, when crossing the Sargasso Sea on a sailing ship, actually observed an abandoned ship among the seaweed, and points out in Wild Ocean, 1957, that if a ship were becalmed long enough to use up her stores, she would eventually grow grass and barnacles until she became virtually unable to sail, and that tropical borer worms would bore into the sides of the vessel until a rotted and putrid mess, manned by skeletons, slipped below the heated surface of the calm sea. Among the many derelicts that have been sighted in the Sargasso Sea within modern times are some that, although not enmeshed in seaweed, have been becalmed and abandoned through a lack of wind. Even the name of the Horse Latitudes, which traverse the Sargasso Sea, is an indication of a stagnant calm. For when the Spanish galleons were becalmed and the drinking water began to run low, the Spaniards were reluctantly forced to kill and jettison their war horses in order to conserve water. Modern motor ships no longer run the risk of being becalmed, a fact that makes the numerous ship disappearances there even more mysterious. Of course, all ships' losses are mysterious, insomuch as relatively few sea captains set out to actually lose their ships. When the fate of a ship is established or even assumed, the mystery ceases. This has not been the case with the many ships that have disappeared into the Sargasso Sea. In the early recorded days of disappearances in the Sargasso Sea and its bordering Gulf Stream area, many losses were set down to weather or pirates. Although Spanish records were surprisingly well kept, no doubt because of the value of the cargoes borne by the gallons of the yearly treasure fleets to Spain. These ships coming from Mexico, Panama, and what is now Colombia, made a rendezvous at Havana and sailed up the Keys and the Florida Strait, where many of them foundered in hurricanes and deposited their treasure on the bottom of the sea for the benefit of subsequent generations of divers. Others were sunk without a trace by pirates, and long after piracy at sea ceased to be a profitable way of life, ships continued to disappear in this area, even when the weather was good, and, as would be increasingly common in later years, without depositing any wreckage or bodies along the shores and islands of the Western Atlantic. Many of these recorded disappearances concern ships of the United States and other navies, starting with the USS Insurgent in August 1800, with 340 men aboard, up to the disaster from unknown causes which overtook the submarine Scorpion with a crew of 99 in May of 1968. The Scorpion, however, was not a disappearance, since it was finally located at a depth of 2 miles underwater, about 460 miles southeast of the Azores. Other unexplained disappearances of naval craft in the area have included the following. The USS Pickering disappeared on August 20th, 1800, with a crew of 90, en route to the Guadeloupe in the West Indies from Newcastle, Delaware. The USS Wasp, October 9th, 1814, sailing in the Caribbean with a crew of 140. The USS Wildcat, October 28th, 1824, en route from Cuba to Thompson's Island with a crew of 14. The HMS Atlantia, January 1880, en route from Bermuda to England, with a total complement of 290, mostly naval cadets aboard for training. The disappearance of this ship was an occasion for a long sea search by the British Navy. Six ships from the Channel Fleet were detailed to advance in a line, separated from one another by several miles over the area in which the Atlantia was presumed lost. This wide search was to be repeated many times in the future, when planes would fly in massive search patterns over the area almost wingtip to wingtip. The search for the Atlantia continued until early May without success. More recently, the USS Cyclops, March 4, 1918, en route from Barbados to Norfolk, Virginia, 309 Navy personnel aboard. Among the disappearances suffered by the Navy Cyclops, this is the best known and also most unusual, considering land, sea, and ship-to-ship communications at the time of World War I, as well as because of the additional items of coincidence. Now, since the First World War was still raging, it was first thought that the Cyclops, a coal supply ship and sister ship to the USS Langley, which was later converted to a US aircraft carrier, had either struck a mine, encountered a German submarine or surface raider, or suffered a mutiny arising from the actions of its mutiny on the bounty type captain. It was also assumed that many of the Cyclops had simply been betrayed to the enemy by its German-born captain, who had changed his last name from German Wickman to a less Teutonic-sounding Worley. In effect, evidence was indicated for some or all of these possibilities, especially since the Cyclops, on leaving port in Barbados, had abruptly turned south instead of north to its announced destination and then just as abruptly disappeared. But eventual examination of the German naval records indicated that there was no German submarine or mines in the area at the time. However, a British ship, also incredibly named Cyclops, had been sunk by U-boats in the North Atlantic. The USS Cyclops, at the time of its disappearance, was carrying a cargo of manganese ore. And sometimes after the war, German agents in South America took credit for having placed time bombs in the cargo. At all events, in the case of the Cyclops, possesses the ingredients for a scenario of mystery and adventure. A German captain of a U.S. Navy vessel, who may have also been mentally deranged, since he usually walked the bridge dressed in long underwear and a derby hat. Passengers including a former U.S. Consul General to Brazil, plus three naval seamen prisoners under indictment for murder, and a couple of AWOL Marines. A theory for the disappearance of Cyclops, which may have furnished the idea for the story of the 1973 movie The Poseidon Adventure, was advanced by U.S. Vice Admiral M.S. Tisdale, who published his opinion based on the vessel's tendency to roll. In an article entitled, "Did the Cyclops Turn Turtle?" In the movie, the passenger ship turns turtle as a result of poor loading and excessive speed when it is struck by a tidal wave, but does not sink. As far as can be ascertained, the Cyclops was not in a hurricane, but, of course, could have been struck by a sudden tidal wave, turned over, and gone straight to the bottom, pulling down the escaping crew and equipment in her vortex. But the only sure thing known about the Cyclops is that it vanished, as have so many other ships large and small within the Bermuda Triangle. In the words of a Navy fact sheet on the USS Cyclops, "Since her departure from Barbados, March 4, 1918, there has been no trace of the vessel. The disappearance of the ship has been the most baffling mystery in the annals of the Navy. All attempts to locate her have proven unsuccessful. Many theories have been advanced, but none that satisfactorily accounts for her disappearance." However, mysterious its disappearance, the vanishing Cyclops had a noteworthy effect upon future events. It was the factor directly responsible for the establishment of the National Strategic Stockpile, which was established several years after the incident. During prior debates in Congress, the Cyclops, which had disappeared carrying a cargo of manganese necessary for the production of steel used in weapons and armaments, was cited as a prime example of the necessity for a stockpile, since it illustrated that the United States could not depend on sea lanes for shipment of strategic materials during international conflicts. Among the more recent peacetime disappearances of warships in the vicinity of the Bermuda Triangle, the case of the Brazilian warship São Paulo is particularly striking. The São Paulo, destined for scrapping and carrying a caretaker crew of eight, was in tow by two ocean-going tugs southwest of the Azores. It vanished during the night of October 3 and 4, 1951. Because of the rough sea, one of the tugs had released its line during the night of October 3rd. However, with the dawn of October 4th and with the sudden return of a calm sea, the cables on the second tug were noted to be broken or severed, and the São Paulo was missing. The resultant search by air and surface craft for the ship was characterized by unusual reports. Unexplained lights had been seen during the night and early morning, and then, on the following day, planes reported dark forms or masses sighted at sea level which soon disappeared. No signs of the ship or of its caretaker crew was ever found. Most commentators on the happenings within the Bermuda Triangle are contented to present them simply as unsolvable mysteries, although several of the most researchers have considered the unexplained disappearances of planes, ships, and people are due to terrestrial or extraterrestrial agencies, a belief shared or perhaps for want of any other logical explanation. One theory, as suggested by both Ivan Sanderson and Dr. Manson Valentine, presupposes the action of intelligent beings based beneath the sea, while another more popular theory, of which John Spencer, himself a member of the U.S. Air Force for 10 years, is a leading exponent, deduces that extraterrestrials, or UFOs, periodically visit the Earth and kidnap spacemen and equipment to ascertain the stage of our technological advancement. They do this not to see if we advanced far enough, but to ascertain when we are in danger of advancing too far. Although these theories will again be considered in the following pages, it is interesting to view that the suggestion of a possibility of an outer space research laboratory to apply this theory to the disappearance of naval vessels and aircraft, the spacing of the dates of disappearances, as well as the shift of disappearances from naval ships to military planes, as well as the variety of ships and pleasure crafts that have disappeared, some carrying only people, another with special cargoes, and again, some curious incidents connected with the later losses are apt to give rise, when considered within the framework of this theory, to some rather disquieting thoughts. Among commercial ships, one of the first recorded mysteries in the area concerned the Rosalie, a French ship bound for Havana in 1840. The Rosalie did not disappear. The crew and passengers disappeared, leaving the ship unmanned, except for one canary, with her sails set and cargo intact. Now, if this is a case of piracy, whoever caused the crew and passengers to vanish seemed to have greater interest in the living people on board than in the ship or its cargo. And if sudden sickness or plague had caused the loss of passengers and crew, there would have been some indication. As an example of how a sudden sickness can cause a ship to become derelict, there is the case of an incident involving slaving days in the Sargasso Sea, when a schooner sighted a slaver which was sailing erratically. Hailed by the schooner, the slaver's captain asked for help. It seemed that all the slaves and crew had been stricken by a disease causing blindness. Their call for help was refused, and the ship departed the area as quickly as possible, leaving the sailor and its crew and slaves to their doom. February 26, 1855, James B. Chester, a three-master, was found by the Marathon, sailing aimlessly without a crew, but her sails set within the Sargasso Sea. Investigations of the ship's captain showed tables and chairs knocked over, and in disarray and personal belongings strewn about. The ship's cargo was intact and the lifeboats in place, but there is no evidence of bloodshed or attack. The crew had simply vanished, either by being taken off the ship or by the unlikely possibility of having jumped overboard. It was noted by the Marathon boarders, however, that the papers and compasses of the James B. Chester were missing. An almost unbelievable incident happened in 1881 to the American schooner Ellen Austin. While sailing west of the Azores, the schooner encountered an abandoned schooner, which upon being boarded proved to be shipshape, with sails furled and rigging intact. The captain of the Ellen Austin took advantage of the windfall by putting his prize crew aboard the derelict. But before the crew could get underway, however, a sudden squall caused the two ships to break contact, and 2 days passed before the derelict was sighted again. And when it was again boarded, it was discovered that the crew had vanished with no indication of what had happened or where they had gone. But the captain of the Ellen Austin was persistent, and after considerable tries on the part of the crew for volunteers, finally persuaded a new prize crew to man the mysterious and apparently dangerous ship. Shortly thereafter, another squall came up. Contact was lost again, and neither the vessel nor its second prize crew was ever seen again. A comparison suggests itself here between the abandoned ship and a trap, even with the sudden squalls fitting into the picture. The whole idea is so outrageous. And that's all we're going to have time for. I've been reading The Bermuda Triangle by Charles Berlitz. We've been talking about lost ships at sea, and we'll continue with that next time. Until then, this is Rick Young from Mystery and Imagination saying, pleasant screams.
Fact or fiction? Science or science fiction? Legends and myths? Ghost stories real or imagined? Thank you for joining me on this exploration of the unknown, mystery and imagination.